This week's episode of Still Entitled is brought to you by Rackspace. Did you know that Rackspace can help guide your migration to Amazon Web Services? Rackspace support for AWS offers tooling and automation for account management, security, and best practices. Learn more at rackspace.com/yourcloud. Now on with the show.
Welcome to Still Entitled, the Adam Savage Project. I am Will.
I am Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Oh,
did you have to think about that for a second?
No. I was actually just debating whether or not to use a contraction or say I am. Mm.
I was already through the point of just making that decision before I realized I had not contracted. So
apologies for the late podcast this week. We're recording. We decided to wait till 4:20 to record the podcast.
For some reason. Woo! Yeah. Dude. This is something in the air when I was walking down the street in the Mission today.
That's every day in the Mission.
That's true.
No, it turns out it's a robot.
Yeah, that food robot.
The food robot that you've been seeing pictures of online, and if you didn't know, those pictures were taken just a few blocks from here.
Yeah.
I see them pop up, and there's two, because there's another one that pops up in the dog patch sometimes.
Yes, right.
Which you got to paint a word picture, because Yelp has partnered with a robotics company named Marble, and they have a delivery robot, autonomous delivery robot with a chaperone, I guess. But the robot...
Semi-autonomous, I think.
Then. Really looks like an ice cream cart.
It does look... It's precise. In fact, an ice cream cart...
Yeah.
So one broke down outside of the shop here, and I went out to taunt them and say hi, and an ice cream cart came by at the same time.
Oh, that's perfect.
And they were about the same size.
There was like, the guy pushing the ice cream cart looked at it and was like, shook his head.
Wow, that's like a scene out of what dystopian, choose your dystopian future movie,
exactly.
Looper or something.
It's like a Curb Your, I mean, it's a Curb Your Enthusiasm moment, but also, for the robot.
Right.
Right. Like the robots fail.
You know what your robot needs? Your robot needs a handle.
Zoom in on
that's
the robot.
That's my Larry David.
That's pretty good Larry David.
I don't know why you don't have a handle on there. Oh. And now I sound like the anteater from Pink Panther. The Jackie Mason anteater. I'm an anteater. I eat ants. This is before
this
your time.
This is one of my gaps. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I know.
It's not often I feel so much older, but today it's happening.
That was, well, I mean, you know, the gap between us, you and I have, and Norm and I have the same gap.
Right.
So, like, Norm is a double me away from you.
Well, I could have called this podcast The Three Gaps.
There's only two
decades
gaps.
Apart.
Three of, yeah, decades apart. Anyway. So Pink Panther was always one of those things that came on Saturday morning after the cartoons that I would just turn to another channel.
It's a surrealist masterpiece. The Pink Panther cartoons are fantastic.
It didn't fly for 8-year-old Northeast Tennessee, Will.
He would, like, pull a picture off the wall, throw it on the floor. It would be a trap door, and he'd run down some stairs, that kind of thing.
So this is one of those things where, like, your parents' influence, when you're in the age where your parents' influence still shapes you.
Yeah.
I was not mentally prepared for surrealism when I was not probably college age.
Understood.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think probably you growing up with somebody who was an illustrator.
No, yeah. Magritte was the first painter I knew by name.
Yeah.
So I was deeply inculcated with the surrealists.
We listened to a lot of who sang Kingston Trio.
Oh, wow.
I thought you were going to say the Carpenters.
Yeah.
You hippies.
Yeah.
We were listening to Pete Seeger.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
So cool. Legitimately hippies.
I met Pete Seeger when I was a kid.
Wow.
Because the Hudson River Clearwater Festival, which Pete Seeger was a champion of, happened every year just a few miles north of where I grew up. And so we went there. We saw, oh my gosh. God, not Crystal Gayle. But another singer, I'll remember it sometime during this podcast. Yeah,
Loretta
Lynn's sister. Is that Crystal Gayle?
I think that's Crystal Gayle.
I think that is Crystal Gayle singing The Green Rolling Hills of West Virginia.
Oh, man.
Which is where my dad grew up. So, like, it's one of the few times I saw my daddy cry. Oh. And then we were walking and we passed Pete Seeger in his captain's hat. And my dad said, "Hi, Pete." And Pete looked at him, and my dad was also wearing a captain's hat because he was a hat guy.
Yeah.
Hence me being a hat
guy.
Turns
out.
And Pete looked at my dad and said, "Hey, Captain." And I was like, I couldn't believe that Pete Seeger spoke to my dad. That was awesome.
He knew his name. Good old Captain Savage.
Decades apart.
Norm. So you have to know who Crystal Gayle is. You have to know who Loretta Lynn is because she did an album with Jack White.
Okay.
That's in your wheelhouse.
Right. 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So Pete Seeger was is an American folk singer and an icon of the stripe of Woody Guthrie, mm-hmm. and that important, where Woody Guthrie's early part of the century, stumping for miners and unionization in the early part of the 20th century. Pete Seeger is definitely the mid-century, famous for touring with a group called the Weavers. And singing and writing beautiful protest songs, was right there with Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement. Part of the Hollywood blacklist, absolutely was blackballed out of the entertainment industry for decades because of his communist leanings. I don't even think they were leanings. I think he was right in the middle.
I think he was probably a communist. Yeah.
At least socialist.
Yeah.
Just a super important part of my culture growing up in the late 60s, early 70s, like albums like Peter, Paul, and Mary, mm-hmm. And those kind of Kingston Trio.
I saw Peter, Paul, and Mary play at Wolf Trap once.
What?
Yeah. Wow. Like one of their last shows. That was incredible. Like it was, I kind of went into that as my grandmother took me.
Nice. Yeah.
And when I was in high school, when I was like a freshman in high school, and I was like, this is incredible. These guys, like, they're singing songs that mean things. It's not just the 80s pop pablum that I grew up with.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no Rock Me Amadeus here.
Guys, we're bearing the lead here because the generation unifying thing of this week is the new Star Wars trailer.
Oh, yes. Yes. The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi.
There's a trailer? I didn't know that something happened.
What? Yeah. I will tell you, I enjoyed watching it, mm-hmm. but the degree to which it teased and delivered nothing.
Yes. That's what I wanted a teaser,
of course,
though.
That's exactly what I want, and mm-hmm. I was happy about that, and I think that might be the last trailer I watch.
That's definitely the last trailer I'm watching.
And I think
they
succeeded. So there's a lot of debate right now. So it was unveiled at Star Wars Celebration, which we unfortunately were not at this year. Orlando, bring it back to Anaheim. That makes it much easier for us when it's in Anaheim.
I'm sure that's what their primary concern is. Can we get Norm there?
And Adam. But they unveiled this trailer, two-minute trailer teaser. You got to call it a teaser. But unlike The Force Awakens, first teaser where we saw all the new characters for the first time and the Falcon finally flying after, you know, decades, and BB-8 and all these new characters. This was just letting you know the story's continuing. Mm-hmm. And a gentle reminder, here are the breadcrumbs for the main course come right? December.
You know that the trailer opens as you are sure the movie does with the training sequence between Luke and Rey. You don't know what Luke means at the end of the trailer when he says the Jedi must go. Jedi must end. Whether he means that means that they've finally brought peace to the universe or somehow he is turned to the dark side, we don't know.
I think it's enough for there to be some fun speculation, and we are in the camp where we think the speculation of this kind is fun. But not so much that I don't think we can be spoiled. And you're right. I think it succeeds in getting us ready for the film without giving us too much.
Totally. And, I stopped watching the Rogue One trailers after the second one.
But the one that showed the AT-ATs or the whatever the, mm-hmm. the transport AT-ATs are, I was like, okay, look, in reality, this movie does not need a trailer to convince me that I should go see it. Right?
You're not like, their target audience.
Like
none of us are.
I think if you are aware that there is a new Star Wars,
right? I mean, they live streamed and debuted at Celebration.
Yeah.
And it needs to be for everyone. But serve all the purposes.
But the point of this the trailers for these Star Wars movies aren't to let people know, hey, there's a Star Wars movie coming out. That's probably taken care of now. Right.
Or that's a smaller percentage of their ultimate goal. I also watched this week the honest trailer of Rogue One.
Oh. Is that the one with the split of The Force Awakens and the...
This is honest trailers. They say things like, featuring a cast of people who, how do we say this, just don't get too attached to them.
Oh, they do great voiceovers and
so good. And featuring none of the shots from this trailer.
Right.
And actually, when you see all the shots from the trailer that aren't in the movie lined up, you know, none of the stories about why things are so different have really told the story. And I look forward to some extra material someday on some DVD that show us.
I hope that somebody will like release the deathbed. Here's the making of story. Right. Like
who knows?
I just want to know
who knows
the trailer form factor, the 90-second now 2.5 minute trailer is just a piece of anthropology mm-hmm. in the history, the chronology of filmmaking.
Yeah.
A part of the marketing process, the production process, Rogue One, especially part of the production process. It is an artifact of that film being mm-hmm. made.
And so there's also now a full culture that grows up. Each time a trailer comes out, Gizmodo and other sites, IO9, start doing articles about, like, here's all the things we know.
We put it together.
And they build flow charts and they start looking at plot lines. And I'm never interested in that kind of discussion.
So
it just doesn't enhance my movie going experience.
That's where I ended up. Joey did this years before any of us even considered, and this is why he's smarter than all of us. but when I went into Rogue One cold, I went into Rival completely cold.
Yeah.
Like every time I go into one of these big science fiction movies, Get Out, I went in completely cold, right? The result is that I have the pure experience. It's what the filmmaker intended, not what the marketing department wanted me to get excited about going to the movie for before the film came out. And like, this is a good example of a really well done trailer. There's no plot. There's no character development. There's really like the only thing that you get is that there's going to be a training montage, which you knew was going to happen anyway.
Well, the training could be the whole film. Who knows?
And
I like the sizzle. I gotta say,
it's exciting.
I like the anticipation. I like the water cooler talk, which we're doing right now. I like the deep dives. And it's, even if you're not going to read those articles now, I like going back to the articles after the movie comes out.
That's absolutely the
trailer.
On the flip side, I will tell you, I can't stop watching the trailer for Wonder Woman.
I haven't even seen it.
Oh, so there's three.
Yeah.
And many sites are putting them all up in line so you can watch them all together. Gal Gadot, is Wonder Woman, aside from being preternaturally beautiful, as you'd expect them to cast, she seems amazing in the role. And from my friends at FBFX who worked on her costume, she's totally a delight to work with. They've now worked with her on three films. So there's Batman versus Superman, the Wonder Woman film, and now the Justice League. And say she's just wonderful to work with. And the costumes are magnificent. And I don't know how that movie's going to be. It could totally blow. So I feel like for Wonder Woman, I'm like, I'm enjoying the trailer so much. I'm just going to keep watching them and enjoying a movie that might not be the one I end up seeing.
In many cases, the trailer is the best part. And like
Ghost in the Shell.
Ghost in the Shell, Watchmen, they're masterful. Almost music
video. I like Watchmen, Norm.
I like Watchmen too, but I like the trailer is better than the film.
With the Trent Reznor?
No. With Smashing Pumpkins.
Yes.
And there are just feats of editing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, even if the film ends up not being great, to have just that moment in time where you were excited about the movie for the trailer and that told the story, that glimpse of it, is totally fine. I'm happy to have that.
So speaking of trailers that were way better than the movie, I watched a thing just this morning, Nerd Writer's piece on how Passengers would be far more watchable if you watched it in a complete, if they cut it in a totally different order.
So Passengers is...
So have you not seen this film?
I haven't
film?
Seen it, but hold on, let me guess.
You've
seen the film.
Okay, so then I'd love to...
Well, okay, we have to enter spoiler cast territory. This is not a real warning, because I don't think people are out there waiting to watch Passengers and then listen to this podcast.
No.
I don't think they ever wanted a Passengers spoiler cast, but we're going to get it.
No, and if you were waiting for Passengers, really don't.
Well, so hold on.
I was.
The visual, like I read this, is a script that I read years ago because John Spates he wrote Doctor Strange last year. It's a really good script.
You read the script that Keanu Reeves had been developing for 10 years.
Yeah.
I want to read that.
Yeah, I have that.
Okay,
yeah.
I'd really like to read that.
So,
and John Spates also was one of the first writers on Prometheus. And this is a script, to give you some sense, the context of why Hollywood, when you talk to a lot of people who are filmmakers, they say this, everyone says, the script was so good. The reason they're saying that is that Passengers, the script that John Spates wrote, this is almost a decade ago now, was on the blacklist.
Right.
As the blacklist was being formed. And this is the...
famous yearly compendium of unproduced genius scripts.
Which now has become a famous... I mean, Little Miss Sunshine came out of this. Social Network came out of it. Mm-hmm. But this is back in 2006 and 2007 when Passengers was on the top of the blacklist. It was a film that Hollywood deemed could not be made because it was too expensive. The script, sometimes, as great as a story as it could be, it was too expensive to make.
Right.
They do the cost-benefit analysis. And so people in Hollywood had been championing this film from when Keanu Reeves had been developing it to finally Sony got the money to make it with Chris Pratt, Jennifer Lawrence, spent the money.
Which necessitated, apparently,
a certain type
radical
of film.
Changes to the script.
And it's not radical
it's
changes.
Not radical.
It's radical
okay.
direction.
Yeah.
and they had to present it and market it and edit it in a certain way because of those actors.
Okay, so what was the original direction the script went in?
Okay.
So let's talk about the movie shows first. Okay, the basic premise of the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. It's
Titanic meets Guardians of the Galaxy.
It's the worst stalker. No, it's single white female.
Hold on. The basic story is it's a hard science fiction story of what a man's exploration into a colonization of a different world.
Well,
right? A generation ship.
That's the background.
The background.
A ship of people in hypersleep are heading on a 120-year journey to a new Earth.
Right. And Chris Pratt plays...
And it's a luxury cruise ship version of the traveling to
But with all of the things that old style ocean liner... Yeah. Yeah, there's multiple classes of passengers. There's a whole thing going on.
Julie's doing shuffleboard on the Lido deck, etc.
Right. Yep.
Exactly.
And he wakes up because of some accident, wakes up from cryosleep, and he can't get back into cryosleep, so he's going to end up dying on the ship.
It's a malfunction.
He
has 90 years on the voyage to go when he wakes up.
And he's like 30-something years old. He's going to die. So the conflict comes in and that he decides to wake up a fellow passenger.
He decides not to kill himself.
Yes.
And then at the most dark moment of his soul, he becomes infatuated with another sleeping passenger who happens to be Jennifer Lawrence.
A really attractive blonde woman.
And he can see her and he becomes a very sleeping beauty type scenario where he then makes the decision to wake her up and
pretend that she's been woken up under the same conditions he has.
Yes.
And then they fall in love, or she falls in love with him by his design. And then when she finds out that he woke her up, thereby sentencing her to death on the ship, that's where the central conflict comes in. And
it's really Groundhog Day meets Titanic, if you want to get down to it.
At the end, the movie at the end. So
that's awesome.
At the end,
he redeems himself
because they saved the ship. The ship was going to end up being destroyed anyway.
Like the malfunction that woke his pod up would have killed everyone on the ship anyway.
And together they save the ship, and she decides in the film to not go back to cryosleep because only one of them can. They have this magic MacGuffin space pod, and she decides to stay with him, and the moral of the story is that their love conquers all, which was not well received.
No.
And poorly...
It's fucking creepy.
Yeah.
It is. And the sense of that conflict of the film of how do you, one, do you redeem the character Chris Pratt plays? And two, if the director and the storyteller chooses to make redemption part of the story, can that even be achieved?
Right.
I think the film shows
Right. And so I tried to watch this recently.
Yeah.
In a hotel. It was somewhere. And I only got up to the moment at which he decided to wake her up, and I was like, I can't watch anymore.
Well,
it made me so upset.
But so there's two things that they clearly knew this was going to be a problem,
right?
Because they make the final conflict require both of them working separately together, same purposes. Chris Pratt has to risk his life to do the part that he has to do,
right?
And then she comes out and saves him at the end because like his choice when he wakes her up is madness versus waking her up and killing her, essentially.
Yeah.
And her choice at the end is madness versus waking him up and doing the whole thing again. So there's mirror image choices.
I could see why they thought that they'd potentially solved the problem in their script.
And I know that to the filmmaker's credit, they tried to tackle this as earnestly as they could with the confines of still trying to sell it as a romance story.
I totally agree with that.
And that was the problem.
And it's also a beautiful movie.
Oh, it
looks
great.
The money is on the screen. Their performances are terrific. It's just the plot that drives me
crazy. So here's the thing.
Yeah.
In the script, they do a really good job illustrating that the character played by Chris Pratt is full on completely lost his mind and has descended into madness. Right. And in the movie, you get that he's on the edge of that, but you don't get that he is mad.
He's put on a big fake beard, a pretty bad beard, by the way.
Yeah.
And there was a sequence where he like looks in the mirror and he says, "Don't do this," as he's shaving his beard. So he's already made up his mind. He's going to do it, but he says, "Don't do this. Don't wake her up." And he's shaving. And that's like a nice, like, thriller, psychological thriller moment.
But in the script, he's totally off the
In the script, off, you get like from his conversations with the bartender, from the things that he's doing around the ship.
Right.
He's
smearing his own poo on the wall.
It's not quite that bad, but like the scene, specifically the scene where he's working on the outside of the door And like he's
that was the most that was really amazing to me because that's precisely what I would be doing.
Yeah.
Well, there's a working the problem. Right. I think what John Splates wanted to do, he said this before, is put you in the mind of what would you do.
Right.
And put a normal person in a fantastical scenario and let it unravel. Mm-hmm. And the director, they just, however they edited, they just didn't earn that.
No.
To me, it was that he showed that he was really worried about what was going to happen to him versus what was happening to him. And you could, like, in the script, they illustrated that with the progression of his violence against that door, right?
Right, right.
His conversations with the bartender. And in the
film, The Shining. Look at the carpet. Yeah. It's the carpet from The Shining. It looks just like The Shining. Well, that's
Chris,
not enough.
And Chris Pratt played it a little bit too goofy and a little bit not enough mad, which, you know, who knows whether that's him or direction or whatever. But that was the takeaway. And I think if you had believed that his descent into madness was complete and we were in, like, a Heart of Darkness situation.
Listen.
I still don't think it's redeemable.
I think
the shot of him outside the door when you saw how much equipment he'd brought to try and get into the bridge, that made me deeply sad. And I really felt for that character of like, screw it. I am going to try every last thing and all the tools laid out there, the mess. I mean, was brilliantly laid out. And that was the one time I felt real.
And that was
the
show.
With the takeout food, right?
Yes.
Right.
And then they instead told, they had the Lawrence Fishburne character tell the audience, a drowning man, you know, drags everyone down. A sinking man drowns, you know, he was drowning. Like, I don't need that told to me. Show it in more cases.
Yeah.
So the Nerd Writer video that Adam's referring posits that the film could potentially be salvage with a re-edit.
Can I guess?
You can edit.
Yeah. I guess that they cut out the reveal about him waking her up. They keep that mysterious and put that at the very end when she has a flip out after the ship is already damaged and goes through the whole thing.
Opposite.
No.
It's really
open.
In fact, wait. Yeah. What they talk about is the problem with the film is that you're Chris Pratt. He's your protagonist. And because his behavior is so questionable, you're complicit. This is the problem with him waking her up. You're complicit because that's your main character.
Right.
And so what they posit is she's your protagonist. Open the film with her waking up as if the whole way the progression happened with him waking up and not being sure what's going on, do that with her instead. So open up 30 minutes into the film as she's waking up. And now his motivations seem really creepy and weird. You don't know if he's a good guy or a bad guy.
So then it's a thriller rather than a romance. Yeah,
exactly. And that's how he had, and I think it does work that way, but I disagree. I think that is a fair way to edit what's already been done, but I think it betrays the intent of the film, which is, it wasn't intended to be a thriller and a horror. And if you wanted to make a thriller and a horror, yes, you could make it that way. But I would rather try to save the film and make it more thought-provoking with the intent that John Splates had in the film. And there are a couple ways that I think, as I watched this film, that I would have either changed or ended it. And people have thrown these suggestions out also. One, I think it would have been cool to have a reveal to show, wake from her perspective as well, but reveal that he woke up not 1 year ago, but like 20 years ago.
Or 8 years. Like, like.
And so he has the mind of a child and been alone, and it's really the deep
end. That's cool. That's messed up. And I mean, that takes me a long way towards understanding, but then I would imagine that.
And two.
It has, the danger of that is that it ends up being like a Florence Nightingale situation where she has to bring him back to humanity.
Right. But
which is also creepy, but is maybe a little bit more excusable. I don't know.
And the relationship is different. Then the relationship isn't maybe the lover, the creeper lover relationship, but it's maybe more of a, she's taking care of him.
And frankly, I also have a problem with this because she's so young.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a wonderful actress and I love her and she deserves her Oscar. But as a romantic lead, she's like, what, she's like 24?
Like when I was reading the script, in my mind, it was like Michelle Monaghan, someone like.
It creeped me out. The youth aspect.
If it was Keanu Reeves and Michelle Monaghan, it would be a little bit different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
The other way that people have thought about how it could end, and I completely agree, is one way to end. So there's the MacGuffin pod. Right.
Right.
Is not to let Chris Pratt live at all, not make it redeemable. Like, give up on the fact that he could be redeemed and that you can make a love story out of it. Let them go through the motions and then put it on her to make the decision. Now then she gets to be the normal person put in the fantastical scenario and let the film linger with she's left alone in the ship. He died saving the ship.
Well, that's right. Your 70s science fiction.
And then
ending, right?
Does she go and look through the wave of pods and wake someone else up
right.
a year later?
Or does she have his baby?
Well, so the other thing, the other big difference in the script
yeah.
is that the computer failures that doomed the ship that they eventually fixed also killed everyone in the pods.
Oh,
except for those two.
Oh, so and him waking her up
saved her life.
Which I don't think doesn't redeem it either.
But again,
it's the same problem yeah. that the film has. But I'm really curious, I would love.
I have never met Keanu Reeves, and I know some people who know him, and apparently he's a delightful, wonderful person. And mm-hmm. I would love to sit down, and maybe he wouldn't want to do it publicly, but pick his brain about what he saw in the script and why he wanted to make it.
I think Keanu could do the desperation much better.
I totally agree.
It was a hard sci-fi, like the script as I read it was a really hard science fiction problem, right?
Right.
What if you're alone on this 120-year journey, you're a third of the way through it,
and you wake up and you're never going to see another person,
you're going to die.
And you had the Martian, the same thing of him trying to work the
right.
problem, going
right.
through all the different possible solutions,
right.
which they touch on in the film.
They illustrate it, but as we saw with The Martian, it was really hard to show that when you can't tell it.
But also, I think, Will, you're talking about in the original script, everyone else dies. They're the last two on the ship, and the film ends with their generation ship, landing in the new planet.
Yeah.
The doors open, and kids run out, and it's their great grandchildren and children.
Oh, is that how the film ends?
And that's how the script ends. And the camera tracks inside.
Oh, right. So everyone else dies, but they create new humanity.
You think it's going to be a twist ending, but the twist that you expect that the ship lands and it's empty and it's a ghost ship isn't the twist that they give you.
And the camera goes in and you have the tree that he plants becomes their family tree, yeah. literally. And they are the Adam and Eve of the ship.
The whole planet full of creepers. Little creepers.
Inbred creepers.
Well, I mean, presumably there's other people already on the planet.
It's just like Seven Eves where you have like the eggs in storage and you know, you just gotta
harvest
IVF.
The skin cells out of the busted.
Right. We're gonna have to scrape the fingernails of...
The other solution that I have, and this is one I'm most happy with.
We gotta move on from this.
I know. Yeah, this is my last thing. And I think it's the best possible solution is... The end of the film, she's given a choice to go back to sleep.
Yeah.
And she chooses not to.
Yeah.
Right? And this is the director and the writer's
Stockholm
way of
syndrome
saying,
is what that's called.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, now she has a choice. I would have been happier with her and him switching off and going to sleep 1 year at a time.
That's a cop-out,
And they have one day with each other every year. And so by the end of the film, 90 years later, they are
married last year.
They are 90 years old. They get to see the landing of the ship.
Yeah.
And everyone wakes up and they are two old people because they've each have the time they needed, the 45 years. And they say spend one day with each other.
And then they both die holding hands.
But they get to see the planet.
And she holds him up as he falls off of the board and sinks into the ocean on the new planet. And I kind of dig that.
I kind of dig that. That's kind of nice.
That's a total Deus Ex Machina.
Totally.
Technological MacGuffin.
All right.
Okay.
I think we have spent as much time as we ought to on Passengers.
I was so bummed out watching the movie because the script was so interesting and challenging. Like it was hard. And it's so gorgeous. The ship is so gorgeous.
Really gorgeous. Spacesuits. Totally. And,
like all the science, all the space, like they even did the conservation momentum right with him. Like he's untethered flying away into space. And the way he gets going in the direction he needs to go is by throwing something the direction he doesn't want to go.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's great. It's
it's so frustrating.
What else are we going to cover in this? The Science March is happening on Saturday.
Oh, my God. Just 2 days from now.
2 days from now.
Earth Day, April 22nd. MarchForScience.com is the website you want to go to for information. It's happening.
There are marches in 430 cities all over San Francisco and the world. I think it's actually many more than that now.
Yeah. So probably one close to where you live.
I am the keynote speaker in our hometown here of San Francisco.
Ooh.
Yes.
Cool.
I'm going to sing a Spice Girls song. No, I'm kidding. I'll actually
tell you what you want, what I really, really want.
I want a Zigga Zigga Ah.
Well, I was going to the Science March on Saturday, but
generations apart, decades apart.
Anyway, yes, the Science March is happening on Saturday. That's very exciting. We are also going to have a heavy presence tested and my cosplay passions at Silicon Valley Comic Con.
This is so
Steve
cool.
Wozniak this weekend.
This is so cool what you're doing.
Really, really cool.
So we have a room set up that's going to be Adam's Cosplay Cave and Lounge, some stuff from the cave here, some costumes, and we have some of our friends flying in to run some workshops for foam fabrication and painting. So if you're going to be in San Jose, go to Silicon Valley Comic Con, hang out. If you're a cosplayer, you can stop by and you can patch up your costume, hot glue, tape, rivets, whatever you
needles,
need.
Needles, thread, the whole
needles,
thing.
Needles, thread. We made the toolkit yesterday.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
This is one of the things that you talked about when we first went to Comic Con with you in 2012.
How much I love the fact that people run around being mobile repair stations and cons have repair stations. I wanted to do the same thing.
That's awesome. I'm so excited that it's finally happening. So
it's a wonderful idea, and it's, you know, it's about also giving back to this amazing community that has given me so much and given us so much. It's the egalitarianism and the sharing of information, techniques, enthusiasm, inspiration. It's a thrilling and lovely community.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
I think, is anything else to tease on Tesla?
We were at the Replica Prop Forum's annual showcase and party. We've saved that, talk about that for another time, but videos are on the site. It was great to see a lot of familiar faces, meet some new people, see their projects up close. Wonderful K2SO.
Oh, really? Yeah. A full-size puppeted one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But those videos are on the site.
And on a budget, a genuinely cool budget.
I popped into Ken Plume's A Bit of a Chat podcast this week.
Yes, I saw your avatar on his Twitter feed.
Yes, we talked about virtual reality and The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Are you enjoying it?
That game is unbelievable.
Really?
It is. Norm, you've played. They built a world. They did the thing, you know, open world games have been around for a really long time. Those games work by taking like different competing systems and kind of making them interact, making the player make them interact in interesting ways. Mm-hmm. And the thing that Nintendo did is brought that and added a level of polish to it that I've never seen before. You know, instead of gating your progression with a series of invisible walls and the kind of normal video game bullshit, they just give you a stamina meter and let you climb whatever you want. If you figure out a way around that, you can go to places you're not supposed to go. And
wow.
It is one of the most incredible video games I've ever played.
Josh, my lighting guy on the tour, was playing it every single day.
And the fact that it's on the Switch, so you can like just chuck it in your bag and when you're on the train or whatever, have 10 minutes, you can load it up and go fishing.
I wanted to point out that I keep forgetting to mention this, but my mom listens to this podcast.
Hi, Adam's mom.
Hi, mom. She sometimes complains that the microphone hides my pretty face and she wants to see us.
We've all seen enough of your pretty face. Let's be real.
I'm just saying about my mom. You know, she's my biggest fan. She's amazing. I'm going to see her in a few weeks. She's going to come out here to San Francisco, but I know that she's listening. So I want to say, Mom, I love you.
Hi, Mom.
Hi.
My mom doesn't listen to the podcast. I hope. I don't know. She's never said it if she does.
Well, when I talk to her.
Yes.
No, I'm kidding.
Let her tell her I said hi. Say hello to my mother for me, Adam.
Say hi to your mother for me.
We'll see you guys next week before Marky listening. Mark doesn't come get us.
All right.
Bye, guys.
Bye. That was awesome.
Once again, I want to thank the sponsor of this week's episode of Still Entitled, and that is Rackspace. Rackspace support for Amazon Web Services offers tooling and automation for account management, security, and best practices. Control your costs and relax knowing Rackspace will monitor your AWS 24/7. Learn more at rackspace.com/yourcloud. We'll see you next week.